y'all so very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, in studio with me today, I have a special guest. I am really excited about this one. This is, I can't say best-selling author just yet, but a selling author, Kyle Phils.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in studio. Thanks for the introduction,
that's
man.
That's right.
Still not fully grasping the fact that we're authors. Pretty cool, huh?
Well, the only way it happened is because you and I didn't have to physically write it. So the grammar's done properly. The spelling is done properly.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a collection of stories that people have sent us. Right. Yeah. We didn't do anything.
Yeah.
We just arranged them.
I'm
more of an arranger.
Yeah, not an author.
Not an author.
An arranger.
An arranger.
You're like, I don't conduct the wedding, but I help get the flowers put out, right? Like, that's kind of the way this is. I didn't write all the stories. I just arranged them in an interesting way.
Well, and we've been getting a lot of positive feedback, which is good to know. Because, you know, when you send something out like that, you never know how it's going to be received.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how many stories I've already collected.
It just keeps coming.
People are like, dude, this is my story. Yeah. I saw this one. This one was similar.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody that's bought, that's purchased any of it, please leave us a review for it. While you're feeling in the review mood, leave a review for the podcast. Go on Spotify, go on Apple, wherever you get it.
Absolutely.
Leave a review for the podcast too.
It all helps.
I miss whenever I used to ask y'all to leave reviews and then put crazy things in the review. That's still some of my favorites.
Why don't you still do it?
I need to have y'all do it again with recipes. Man, I loved all that. That's the funniest thing in the world. Because all I can think about are people that come in from years later that find the show and they're like, 5 stars and here's a gingerbread recipe. You're like, what the hell is this? What kind of show is this? If you know, you know.
Yeah. Just write us a review and tell us your favorite color. How about that?
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. Something fun.
Tell us which one's your favorite and why it's always me. Lay it on me.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, man, I'm sure everybody's aware of the passing of Chuck Norris. Kind of bummer.
We're not talking about
it. I remember as a kid, now I don't know if you remember this, I used to take karate at Bob Nuttall's. Remember Bob?
Oh, yeah.
And there was a seminar that Chuck Norris was going to be there. Chuck Norris was coming, you know, because he's from Texas. And he was doing a seminar, and I wanted to go so bad, but I think it was like $200, and my mom and dad didn't have the money, so I didn't get to go to this Chuck Norris seminar.
But you got to train with Bob Nuttall's.
Yeah, but man, if I had went to that seminar and Chuck Norris taught me the 5-finger death punch,
could you imagine?
I'd be a completely different person.
Man.
Right?
Man, that's Lone Wolf McQuade, Code of Silence, right?
The Mission Octagon. Impossible.
No.
Mission Impossible, was it? Not Mission Impossible.
Now you have a Missing in Action.
Missing in Action. That's what it is.
One, two, and three, and maybe four. Didn't they do four? I know they did 3 of them.
When you watch those now, they're hard to watch. But when as a kid, boy.
Well, see, here's the crazy thing. Because I think Chuck's actually from Oklahoma and then come from down here because my mother-in-law and Chuck went to school together.
Oh, really?
He was a couple of years older than she was, and she had met him up there and the whole thing. Because I was always pumped. I think she knew her family knew his family or something along those
lines. That's cool, man.
So I'd always wanted to meet him so I could be like, hey, you know, and then see if he even knew and whatnot. The other great thing was, don't forget, is like Chuck was really, he used to fight, like for real was a fighter.
For real, yeah.
And when he found jiu-jitsu, he started training with the Gracies, and he was a black belt in jiu-jitsu too. So it's like Chuck was legitimately no joke, right?
Gacy's. Yeah.
He was no joke. The same as, like we always laugh about, what's his face? Al Bundy, the dude that plays Al Bundy. He's been a black belt for like 30 years. Dude.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? So it's just wild. But yeah, I'm going to miss Chuck. Chuck was great. It was awesome, though. I mean, he just posted some stuff on his birthday the other day, and then he ended up passing away in Hawaii. Is there a more beautiful place? I mean, if you're going to have to give up the ghost, Hawaii is a pretty good spot to go.
In 86, man, he lived a full life.
Yeah, for real. For real. Oh, and I told you when you got in here that I had seen where somebody had said that when death came to Chuck, they just told him that he wanted to take a vacation if Chuck could take over the job. So now
that's
when
one of the best parts is the memes. See, and like my boys don't remember. They never watched any of those movies. They only know Chuck Norris as a guy in these memes.
So they don't know where it actually comes from.
Because they've constantly asked me over the years, it's like, who is this so-called tough guy? Like everything about him is he's a boss. And
now
like,
he's going to be an enigma forever because think of the young kids coming. It's going to continue to hear it that have no idea who he is.
Well, and I'll tell you the same thing happened with like Eddie Murphy.
So
they don't
funny.
Know Eddie Murphy as a stand-up comic. They think of him as the voice of like the donkey.
You hadn't hit him with Raw?
Because, well, that's long, but they never saw him doing it. Now, a little inappropriate for Luke to be watching that. Yeah. But one day. But you know what I'm saying? It's funny because you remember.
Well, my kids were the same way. Right. And then as they got older, I'm like, well, first of all, you need to see who Eddie Murphy is. So this is how, this is Eddie Murphy, right? And then you hit him with that.
What'd it do? Blew him away. They're like, what?
Oh, yeah, they're like, wait a minute. You're like, yeah, that's Eddie. You ever seen Harlem Nights?
Yeah.
Like, dude, it's the best, right? I mean, like,
life.
You got Red Fox. You got Eddie Murphy. You got Richard Pryor. You got, what is it? Stella Reese. Della Reese.
Yeah.
I mean, like, dude, it, and man, the whole, yeah, yeah.
But yeah. They don't remember it that way.
No. I think I've told this story before. I remembered how old I was at one point when my son and my nephew, they were probably sophomores or juniors in high school. And they were in there talking. You were over there. We were over at my brother-in-law's house. We were talking about it. And I brought up Steven Seagal.
Yeah.
And none of them knew who he was except my son, because I had him watch some crazy old Steven Seagal movies. And I'm like, y'all don't know who Steven Seagal is, and you don't know who Jean-Claude Van Damme is. Right? Like, next you're going to tell me you don't know who Dolph Lundgren is. I'm like, get out of here.
I like the way Steven Seagal runs.
You would. Speaking of Steven Seagal, get a load of this story I got for you. Annapolis Valley Goblin.
Oh, I love a good goblin story.
This takes place in near Bloody Creek in Nova Scotia. All right, is that how you pronounce it? They always get on us. Is there some special pronunciation for Nova Scotia?
No, that's where you pronounce
all
it.
Right.
That's where Sidney Crosby's from.
All right.
And he's Nathan MacKinnon.
He's got a crush on Sidney Crosby.
You know, I don't dislike him as much as I used to.
But you don't like him as much as you should.
Yeah, probably not. There's other guys in the league that I hate far worse. Let's just say that.
That have taken his place. So this is how it goes. It says, for years, I have explored the woods, valleys, and caves.
Same.
And old historical places of Nova Scotia.
Oh, not for me, not there.
not up there.
But caves and woods, yes.
Yeah, dude, I hate a cave. I always went looking for mystery, history, and adventure. Is this dude writing a song? But I used to brush off a lot of the stranger stories that I had heard. I figured most of them came from old local talk, exaggerated over time. All that changed when I started spending more time alone in the woods. Back in 2010, when I was about 30, I became interested in an old story about an Acadian vase reportedly found in a cave along Bloody Creek in the 1880s.
Mm.
Supposedly, it had later been shown at the World's Fair. That was enough to send me into the upper reaches of the creek near the mountain, searching both banks for caves, crevices, and anything that looked promising. I followed the water past a gravel pit that had been quarrying granite gravels and further up towards the mountain and the remains of an old power dam from the 1890s that once supplied electricity to Paradise. It was September, and one evening I crossed the creek to search areas I had passed before. The problem was that the sun dropped faster than I expected, and I got caught out with nothing but a worthless little keychain light that barely illuminated the ground in front of my boots. So on the way back, I kept hearing what sounded like birds in the brook. But I couldn't see anything, so I just wrote it off as my nerves. Well, the next evening, I returned with a better headlamp. While heading back out, I saw eyes reflecting silver behind a rock. Now, they bobbed up and down as if something small was peeking over the edge. So I assumed it was just some animal with young nearby coming down to drink. So I cut away through the brush to avoid disturbing it. And after that, I brought an even stronger flashlight, one more powerful enough to let me search properly after the 8:30 p.m. sundown. It's one of those big mag lights.
Yeah,
know,
yeah.
That's like 36D cell batteries.
Yeah, I remember those.
And it would barely put it. The phone, your light on your phone puts out almost that much light, right?
Do you remember the ones that took the big square battery?
Oh, yeah. The old school.
Like
had the
six
big,
lumens?
They were lantern batteries is what they were known for. Yeah.
Six lumens.
Yeah, and it was like half the size of a loaf of bread. Says this would have been my fourth time staying out after dark, roughly 2 weeks after the first keychain light walk. So again, I started hearing splashes in the creek that seemed to follow me. And every time I turned to look, the splashing stopped. Well, this time there were other sounds too. Bird-like chirps, croaking like frogs, and those same silver eyes rising and dipping behind boulders. Now, the strangest part happened in the final stretch between the creek and the little slope that led up to the road where my car was parked. I'd gone about halfway when I realized everything had gone dead quiet. There was no breeze, no sound. Even the creak sounded muffled. As if something, and I like this description, as if something had thrown blankets over the entire woods. I turned around and clicked my flashlight to full power. He cranked it up to 11. That's when I saw the first one clearly. Yeah.
The first one.
Yeah. Peeking from behind a tree was a round face, maybe 16 inches high from what I could judge, with a wide mouth and large silvery eyes that didn't blink. The face ducked back behind the tree the second the light beam hit it. Then, off to my right, near a fallen log, I saw another one, standing fully exposed. It looked like a tiny humanoid, about 18 inches tall, dark-skinned, wiry, and muscular. Long white, brown, and gray hair came off its rounded head and hung almost to the back of its knees. It had a huge tuft of pubic hair, and it looked like hair also covered its shoulders and back when it turned. Then it croaked. The sound snapped me out of my frozen state. Once I really looked, I realized that there were several more of them, maybe half a dozen in all, peeking around rocks and trees or moving slowly towards me. Most appeared to be carrying sharpened sticks. So I spun around and saw another one behind me near the base of the slope, also holding a stick. That was enough. I produced a shotgun. No, I ran.
Good move.
Bolted up the slope toward the road as fast as I could move. And when I looked back, they were already slipping into cover. What struck me even in that panic was how quickly they blended into the surroundings. Their colors broke them up against the brush, tree trunks, and stones so well that they almost vanished the moment they stopped moving. As I looked back, I noticed something under a spruce tree. It was a large mesh onion bag stuffed with vegetables, packaged candy, chocolate, spam, and cheese in baggies. Some of it was still mostly frozen, like it had been left out for a reason and expected to last.
That's what I take with me when I go hunting.
That sounds like the same thing that I've seen you dump out of your backpack. That's it. An onion bag. His backpack's full of candy and chocolate and spam and cheese and baggies and a few vegetables still froze.
Yeah, doesn't sound good.
That sounds like a great meal, right? Now I know he's feeding goblins. I don't know what I saw that night, but I came away with the sick feeling that whoever or whatever those things were, the food was not random. In that moment, I felt as though I had wandered into a place where I was not meant to be. And that if I had not run when I did, I might have ended up being dragged into some old cold hole in the earth. Their heads reminded me of the creatures from Where the Wild Things Are, only more real and far uglier. Rounded silver eyes that never blinked, wide mouths with thick lips, small upturned noses, their bodies, apart from the heavy hair, were close to human in proportion, almost like tiny adults. I went home shaken and spent the rest of the night wondering whether I had just lost my mind. So I went back in the daylight, but from another direction, near where Highway 101 crosses the creek. As I moved through the trees towards the same general area, I realized I was walking through a field of bones.
What?
There were remains of deer and smaller animals scattered all around. Now, at first, it looked like roadkill had just been dragged off of the highway, but the more I looked, the less natural it seemed. Many of the bones were chewed, broken open, and splintered. Some looked sucked clean. They were marks on porcupine bones that looked too small and too human-like to ignore. Cars don't do that. Carnivores do.
Good point.
I did go back again after that, but never alone. And I made sure I was armed with a machete. By then, I'd be taking a 12-gauge. By then, I had begun to suspect that someone may have been feeding those things. Maybe to keep them in one place, maybe to keep them quiet, maybe just to keep people away. I learned later that such a possibility was not as far-fetched as it sounded. As it sounds, things do go bump in the night, and sometimes they also watch you in broad daylight. Rod.
Wow.
So
I like the boulder field. What is it about the boulders?
Dude, I know. I don't get it. But I like the it's goblins.
Yeah, well, and it's very common that they not only hang out in boulder fields, but that they're really camouflaged.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We hear that all the time. Like if they stand still and like ball up in a ball like a crite.
Yeah, they're
like
just critter, gone.
They, like, yeah, you can't hardly see them.
My deal is like if we think that there is possibly like the fae is real, the gnomes, the dwendies, then goblins would have to be in the mix.
100%.
You would have to toss them into the mix.
Yeah.
So there may be some goblins up there in Nova Scotia.
I got a cool one here. Listen to this. It says this happens a few years ago in rural Montana.
Ooh, nice.
A friend of mine called me late one evening asking for help. He'd been out driving the back roads earlier in the day and thought that he'd lost his phone somewhere along the route.
Well, then what'd he call you on?
And yes, he was calling me from his sister's cell phone.
And why'd you answer? His sister's number.
Yeah, good
bro,
point, right?
We gotta find out how you know this family.
The problem was those roads run through miles of empty countryside. Hardly any houses, hardly any traffic. Just dirt roads cutting through fields and patches of woods. Still, I figured we might get lucky. So I picked him up and we started driving the same route that he remembered taking earlier. The sun was already starting to go down. You know that time of the evening when the sky isn't quite dark yet, but the daylight is draining away fast. The kind of light where everything starts to look strange. We drove slowly along the roadside, both of us scanning the ditch for the reflection of a phone screen or anything that might look like it had fallen off of the truck into the grass. Every once in a while, I'd see something shiny near the road and stop. My friend would jump out, walk over, check it. No, not a phone. Just a piece of trash or a rock catching the headlights. After about 30 miles of this, we turned around and started heading back towards town. By now, it was nearly dark. I had the high beams on, and the road ahead was empty for as far as we could see. That's when something stepped into the road. At first, my brain thought it was a deer, but it wasn't. It wasn't shaped right. It came out of the ditch about 30 or 40 yards ahead of us. And when the headlights hit it, I felt my stomach drop. The thing was huge. Bigger than any dog I've ever seen. At first, it was on all fours as it crossed the road, moving in this long, smooth stride. Its back came up almost level with the hood of my truck. Then it stopped in the middle of the road. And then it stood up. Not like an animal rearing up, it rose on two legs the way a person would. Tall, lanky, at least 7 feet, if it was an inch. Its head turned towards the truck, and in the glare of the headlights, I could see the shape of its face. It looked like a German Shepherd, but stretched longer, more wolf-like. The fur was dark, almost black, and its shoulders rolled with muscle whenever it moved. For a few seconds, none of us said a word. We just sat there staring at this thing, and it was staring right back. There was no confusion in that moment. This wasn't a dog. This wasn't a bear. And it definitely wasn't a person. The thing tilted its head slightly, like it was studying us. Then it stepped off the road. Two long strides, and it disappeared into the ditch on the other side. Just gone. Just like that. I slowed the truck to almost a stop, both of us staring into the darkness where it had vanished. My friend finally broke the silence. He said, "What the hell was that?" I didn't answer, because I didn't know. But I know what it looked like, and I know one thing that still bothers me. Animals don't run from headlights. They bolt. They panic. Whatever we saw that night, it didn't run. It walked out into the road, stopped, stood up, and looked straight at us like it understood exactly what we were. Carl. Wow. Dog man.
Another one. Another one of those ones where, like, it knows exactly what's in that car. And it knows if it gives you an uneasy feeling, it's getting something in return from this.
Yeah, that's why I think dog man sightings mostly are, like, demonic.
Yeah, they
it's
do
feel trying it. It's somehow feeding off your fear.
Yeah, I 100% right? believe that. 100%
Very
believe it.
Very crazy.
Well, that is unsettling. Any dog man is unsettling. Anything that they do. We're going to take a quick one. We're going to pay some bills. We're going to come back from this. When we get back from this, me and Kyle don't discuss our stories. So I have a pile of stories and I'm going to try to make him feel uneasy and he's going to do the same. So when we get back, we got more stories piling in, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
This episode of Expanded Perspectives is brought to you by IQ Bar.
Aw, yeah.
Our exclusive snack and hydration sponsor. Look, Life is hectic, especially now when the NHL playoffs are about to start. Baseball's about to start. Between watching your favorite team, work, family, or recording in the studio, everything else is pulling at you, and it's easy to forget to eat right or get the protein your body actually needs. And that's where IQ Bar comes in. Before I head out for the day, whether I'm going to work, going to a Stars game, going to the studio, or sitting in just a hunting blind, I always toss a couple IQ bars and a few hydration packs in my bag. It's quick, it's easy, and I know that I'm fueling my body the right way. IQ Bar is the better-for-you plant protein snack made with brain-boosting nutrients designed to refuel, nourish, and satisfy your hunger without that brutal sugar crash later on. IQ Bar products are completely free of gluten, dairy, soy, GMOs, and artificial sweeteners, making them a clean, natural snack for you to reach to anytime you get hungry. I suggest trying their ultimate sampler pack. That's the perfect place to start. In that pack, you'll get 9 IQ Bar protein bars. You'll get 8 IQ Mix hydration sticks, and you'll get 4 IQ Joe mushroom coffee sticks. It's amazing. Some of my favorites include salted caramel chip, wild blueberry, banana nut, chocolate sea salt. My favorite hydration pack is the Arnold Palmer, but I also like peach mango, and I also dig the passion fruit. And the coffees, they have toasted hazelnut, cafe mocha, vanilla spice, or just original black. Cam, you love it. You try it. Your wife likes the mushroom coffees. You like the snacks. I like hydration packs.
Yeah.
Tell everybody where they can get
theirs.
Dude,
I love the snack bars. It's the one thing, I don't ever get the coffees. My wife takes those away from me. And right now, IQ Bar is offering all of y'all listening, our listeners, 20% off of all products, y'all. 20% off all products plus free shipping. All you got to do is text the word expanded to 64,000. That's EXPANDED to 64,000. It's that easy, folks. That simple. For 20% off all products plus free shipping, message and data rates may apply. See terms for details. Y'all, fuel your brain, fuel your body, and start your day the smarter way with IQ Bar. We are back.
Yes.
And I've got one for you.
All right, man. I'm excited.
This is something I know you're going to like simply for the headline, the whole deal. So it's the reason I grabbed you. It's
another goblin.
Man, I wish. If y'all have any goblin stories, send them.
Do you remember the toys, the Boglins? They were like toys. It was like a little rubber looking goblin thing you could put your hand inside of. They were called Boglins.
Is that where you could make like the face with them and all that stuff?
Yeah, I remember my little brother having them. I'm going to try to find it on Google here.
I think I do remember that. All right, so while he's searching up Boglins, I've got some. Well, he's looking at toys on Google. I've got some.
Yeah, here's one right here.
Hit me with it. What do we got here?
A Boglin.
Oh, I do. Does that one look like a slea stack? I do remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. They're proud of them. Oh, because they're old, right?
Yeah. They're, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like collectors.
The late 80s.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's not that old.
What are you talking about, bro?
So this is what I got for you. It says, this story was told to me by my uncle, and he always swore that it really happened. He was the only person in the family who ever experienced anything like this, so nobody else could really verify it firsthand. And even now, I'm not really sure what to make of it. In 1979, during the Civil War in El Salvador, my uncle was serving in the military. Now, the Civil War in El Salvador went from 79 to like 92. There was almost like 80,000 people were killed during this time. It was awful, right? Like most of it, it's awful. So said his uncle told him that he and 6 other soldiers were sent into the woods and jungle to search for armed groups believed to be camped out in the area. After hours of moving through the jungle, and I'm going to stop right here. Anytime we start getting the military in the jungle, there's always stuff that pops right up where you're like, what? They suddenly felt the ground begin to shake. Now, he said it felt like something enormous was coming towards them. He compared it to the scene in the Jurassic Park film when the T-Rex approaches and everything trembles. At first, they assumed it was enemy activity, so they all immediately took cover. Then he saw something that shocked him. He said a giant figure was walking in the distance. I asked him if maybe he had just been seeing a very large man or even some kind of ape-like creature such as Bigfoot. But he insisted that that was not at all what he saw. He said it looked more like a giant human being, something out of Jack and the Beanstalk, that the trees partially blocked the view so he couldn't make out every detail, but he said it was clearly humanoid and unbelievably large, and according to him, it seemed to be as tall as the tallest trees that surrounded it.
Hmm.
He told me he wanted a better look, but fear took over. And once he realized what he was seeing, he stayed hidden and didn't dare to move out into the opening. At this moment, the giant simply just walked right past them. My uncle said all of them were terrified, that they stayed where they were for a while after it passed because they were afraid there might be another one nearby. Two of the men apparently suggested trying to kill it and become rich, but the man in charge told them to stand down. My uncle said everybody thought that that idea was totally insane. As soon as they felt safe enough to move, they headed back to base as quickly and as quietly as possible. And when they reported what had happened, nobody believed them. The pilots in particular dismissed the whole account. They told the soldiers that if something that large was really moving through the jungle, they would have seen it from the air long ago. Now, my uncle said that all of the men described what they had seen, though not every detail matched exactly. One claimed the figure looked bald. Another thought it might have been wearing some kind of loincloth, almost like Tarzan. But he always emphasized one thing to me. He did not believe he got a perfect look at it. What he knew for certain was that the ground shook as though some massive being was approaching, and that then he saw what appeared to be a gigantic human form moving through the distance. He hid, waited for it to pass, and got out of there. That was his story. I asked him the same questions anyone would ask. If something that large were real, would there not have been bones, a body, or some trace of it somewhere, especially in a country as small as El Salvador? His answer was always simple. I do not know about any of that. I just know what I saw that day. Now, I still don't know what to think. It sounds impossible. My mother once suggested that it may have been some kind of spirit, something that manifested as a giant in order to frighten them. She said that during the Civil War, there seemed to be much more paranormal activity because of the sheer amount of death and trauma. My grandmother used to say that in those years, you could look out the window and see bodies lying in the street. But that still does not explain the ground shaking. So, I've always wondered if anyone else has ever reported seeing a true giant, the kind that always or sounds like it comes straight out of folklore. That possibly terrified me as a child because if my uncle really did see what he claims he saw, it meant something impossible must have walked through that jungle.
100% giants are real.
So a giant.
In fact,
we're talking about a giant, giant.
This isn't the only time I've heard of a sighting in South America.
Oh, yeah?
I've heard of other people claiming that they've seen a Colossus or something like that. So
maybe
it makes you wonder.
It is.
And,
oh, yeah.
I mean, and there are bones, the skeletal remains of once there were giants, at least once. Well, I like to think that somewhere deep in the remotest parts of the El Salvadorian jungle that there's
a giant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a cool idea.
Giants were real. Let's just move past that. Look, folks, giants were real. They were on this planet. They've been documented. They were real.
Look up Fritz Zimmerman.
Yeah.
He's got an amazing book on it. Look up Hugh Newman, Jim Vieira, Richard Dewhurst.
Go listen to Nate and Luke.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They cover it with
Nephilim. Because Nate knows.
Yeah.
The first time we were on Blurry Creatures.
Well, Nate knows because Nate's close to a giant already.
No kidding.
He's just a big ginger giant. That's in his bloodline.
I got a pretty creepy story that
I think
you're
going
to like. This was it happened to this fellow's grandfather. He says, unfortunately, his grandfather's not around anymore. So he's got a lot of questions he wish he could ask, but he can't. But he talks about a story that his grandpa and a couple of his buddies.
That'll be our grandkids. We'll be talking after that when we're gone. Like our grandpas were crazy.
Absolutely. They went. This guy's grandfather went hunting up in northern Michigan with a couple of friends.
Ooh.
He said he and two friends.
The UP?
Yeah. He and two friends rented a small cabin deep, deep, deep in the woods. The place was just old, just a single room with a wood stove and a couple of bunks and a small porch out front. The nearest road was miles away. Now, during the day, it was perfect hunting country. Thick forest, quiet trails, and almost no other people around. Now, this apparently took place, I think, like in the 50s or 60s. So you can imagine back then, Upper Peninsula. Back in like the 50s or 60s, it must have been really remote.
Ask
the
Fred
hunting
Bear.
Must have been a marrying. Yeah, right?
Ask Fred Bear, man.
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been an amazing time. You got to hunt in like Kahakee slacks.
Yeah, yeah.
And you had your red flannel.
Isn't that where Dan Fitzgerald, isn't he from Michigan or is that Wisconsin?
That's a good question that I don't remember.
It was somewhere up there.
Part of the F squad. We grew up watching Fitzgerald and Folkrod.
Yeah, man. It said that during the day, this was the perfect place to hunt. It was perfect. There was thick forest, quiet trails, and no people around. But the night was a little different. And that first night there, something strange started happening. They had finished dinner and were sitting around the wood stove talking when they heard movement outside. Now, at first, it sounded like a deer walking through the leaves. Slow footsteps, like a crunch, crunch here, crunch there. One of the guys glanced toward the window and said, probably just something passing through. That's what they all assumed, until the footsteps stopped directly outside of the cabin. Then the scratching started. Not loud, just a slow scraping sound against the wooden wall, like claws dragging across the siding. The three of them, they all went quiet. The scratching moved along the outside of the cabin, tracing the wall from one end to the other. Then it stopped. A few seconds later, they heard footsteps again, but this time the steps, they were heavier, much heavier. Again, the crunch and crunch, crunch sound of the leaves and sticks and twigs. The sound circled the cabin slowly. One of the guys grabbed a flashlight and walked to the window. He pulled the curtain back just enough to peek outside, and then he froze. For a few seconds, he didn't say anything. Finally, he whispered, "There's something out there." And somebody else in the cabin said, "Well, what kind of something?" He shook his head slowly. "I don't know." They all moved closer to the window, careful not to stand directly in front of it. The flashlight beam cut through the darkness. At first, they saw nothing but trees. Then something moved between them. A tall shape stepped into the edge of the light. Every single one of them felt their stomach drop. It wasn't a deer. It wasn't a bear. And it definitely wasn't a person. This thing was standing on two legs, tall, lean, and covered in dark fur. Its arms hung low at its side, and its head looked more like a wolf. Not just wolf-like, but a full canine muzzle. Ears pointed straight up. The creature stood there at the edge of the trees for a moment, staring at the cabin. Then it dropped down onto all fours. The movement was smooth and unnatural at the same time, like it could switch between walking like men and running like an animal, either one without effort. And then it started circling the cabin again. Again, they could hear the crunching of the weight. The footsteps moved slowly around the walls. Every few minutes, they would hear the scratching again, claws dragging across the wood, testing, feeling along the walls. One of the guys whispered, "Turn off the lights." So they killed the lantern. The cabin fell into darkness, and for a while the footsteps stopped. They hoped that maybe the thing had left. Then something hit the porch, a heavy thud that rattled the boards. All three of them turned towards the door. Slowly, something walked across the porch outside. They could hear the boards creaking under its weight. The doorknob rattled, just once, like something had reached out and tried it. None of them moved. None of them breathed. After a moment, the porch creaked again. The footsteps moved back down the steps and into the yard. But the circling didn't stop. For hours, this thing, whatever it was, kept moving around the cabin, sometimes on two legs, sometimes on four. Something stopping right outside the walls. Every now and then, they'd hear breathing through the cracks in the boards. Low, slow, close. No one slept that night. Just before sunrise, the footsteps finally stopped. The woods outside went quiet again. Then the sun came up. They opened the door. The ground around the cabin was covered in tracks, large prints pressed deep into the dirt. Some looked like oversized wolf tracks. others looked disturbingly human. But the strangest part was the pattern. The tracks circled the cabin over and over again, dozens of times, like whatever had been out there spent the entire night walking around them, waiting, watching, and deciding whether or not to come inside. But it never did. Daniel. So what a horrific story,
dude,
of a dog man like sighting. And what's crazy is whether Dan Fitzgerald is born in Wisconsin or Michigan, it doesn't matter. There's a lot of dog man sightings in both Wisconsin and Michigan. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, God.
I mean, that's the first dog man story I ever heard of was Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Linda Godfrey,
dude,
right? The Beast of Bray Road. And that story goes back to the 40s.
What they don't talk about is that light sound of water dripping on the floor. From when your bowels evacuate, you just dumped your bladder from a giant dog man walking around the outside.
Yeah, well, and listen, what's crazy is some of the footprints look dog-like, some of them look human-like. So what is that?
Were-man.
Yeah, transformation. They never talked if it was a full moon or not. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point. God, right? I miss it when Luke was when he was little and was afraid of the full moon. All because of you.
Oh, and don't forget, one time when we landed in Pennsylvania, he was bawling his eyes out because he thought we landed in Transylvania.
Yeah, he thought it was Transylvania. God almighty. Now he's all about it.
Oh, yeah, he loves horror movies.
Yeah, loves it. Dude, he watches stuff that gives me the creeps. I'm not watching that stuff.
I had to watch one the other day. Honestly, wasn't that good.
You didn't tell him, though, did you?
Oh, no. No, he gets bummed out.
Yeah, you can't tell him.
Everything's like an 8 out of 10 to a 10 out of 10. He's never seen a bad movie.
Yeah, and you're like, dude, that's not even a 1. That doesn't even move the scale, bro.
Yeah, but I try to tell him all the time, I'm not into horror.
Yeah.
But I'm not into horror because this is my job, right? Like, this is all I talk about is horrific stories.
Yeah. I don't need to be scared. This is in my head when I walk around in the dark out to my stand. So I think about it all. Well, actually, I try not to, right? I try to, like, listen to upbeat music walking in, try to be all cool. So at least when something evil takes me, at least I'm having a good time until it grabs me.
You need to carry an onion sack in there with some cheese snacks, some Spam, some candies.
Yeah.
You leave an offering, so maybe they'll leave you alone. Man, right?
Yeah, that or it just attracts the coyotes. I don't know which one it'll be.
That's okay, too.
That's true.
I hate coyotes.
Dude, that is a creepy. It always makes me think about, at least when they're in the cabins, I always think about Bigfoot. Right? That's where my mind instantly goes. It doesn't think about dog man tracking you down to the cabin and messing with you.
But again, like we've talked about so many times, it never came in. It's like it just enjoys terrifying.
Yeah.
And if it knows it's scaring you, it's just going to keep doing it all night long.
Gets you right up to the edge of fear and then just holds you there for as long as you can till you're just exhausted, emotionally, completely drained. Yeah, it's like Colin Robinson.
Yeah, right. Energy vampire.
It's an energy vampire.
So I'm assuming that they packed up and left the next day. He doesn't really say in the story.
I believe I would have.
I would have, too.
I believe I would have had to call it. Or do you just buckle down and been like, everybody get loaded up tonight. If it comes back, we got something for it.
Let's go to town.
Yeah, get some ammo. Let's get some
silver bullets.
Let's get some silver.
You go to like a
jeweler,
a resale shop, and you buy some silverware. Then you melt it down.
Then you take it there. Yeah, and you get it like it did. What was it? Gary Busey had it done in silver bullet. Remember? My nephew, he's a big fan of Lone Ranger. And the dude making it was like, you know what silver bullets are for? Killing werewolves. Like, he already knew. He knew what
was
going on.
That's a great movie, though, actually.
I do enjoy it. I mean, is it campy and dated? Yeah, I mean, it's from movies back then. But I still enjoy the heck out of it.
The book is really good.
Well, yeah, it's the book. Because it's your crazy mind filling it in.
I think the book's called Cycle of the Werewolf. It's not called Silver Bullet.
I think you're right. Yeah.
And the book is great.
Yeah. But I think he changed it later. After the movie.
Yeah. Well, and I've read some of his recent stuff, and it ain't any good. The back in the days when he was on coke and drinking all the time, that's
when
Stephen
he was
King's,
a crazy person.
Those were the stories were the best.
100%. Just like a musician, right? When you're flirting with the darkness is whenever they seem to be able to really produce some good stuff.
I didn't think about trying that when we were writing our book. Next time, getting lots of coke.
Get some coke, get some booze, and we'll just sit around and just get ripped. I don't think we have the kind of gifts that go well mixing with that. Like, I don't think that I could be better at doing it if I got all up chasing the dragon or whatnot. It might not work.
You don't know that. You might.
That's a good point. I mean, there's only one way to find out. So, I'm not condoning it, folks. It's a joke. For all you young folks, listen. Say no to drugs. You don't want to turn out like Kyle. So.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Anyway. We know now from documents released that like astral projection is a thing.
Yeah.
Like people can legitimately do remote viewing, do all this wild stuff. I've got a story that comes from Samara, Russia in 1999. Mrs. M.G. Korosnova was standing in her kitchen talking to her young son about just common mundane things when suddenly she said physically she felt two impulses bust through her brain. Now, she says it was like two waves, one originating in the cerebellum and ending in the area of her forehead. When it was over, of course, it's painful. Her eyes closed. She's like, good Lord, like massive headache, right? When she opened her eyes, she found herself not in her kitchen, but on the surface of some alien planet. And everywhere from horizon to horizon, she saw a sandy colored surface. The sky above was yellow. She saw three buildings nearby, pyramid shaped. They resembled dwellings, is what she said. But their doors and openings were hollow and dark. She goes on to say that she found herself at this time just walking towards those buildings.
It's like Stargate.
Yeah, but she's not alone. Now, she said around her, she saw several humanoid entities wearing grayish overalls, approximately 140 centimeters in height. That's almost 4.5 feet for all you Americans, okay? They appeared tanned. Now, this is a bit with oriental features. I think okay. We refer to it now as Asian features, but appeared tanned with oriental features. When they approached the building, she felt suddenly as if a curtain in her brain had been suddenly pulled closed. Boom. She said she felt the pain, blinked again, looked down, kind of rubbed her eyes. When she looked back up, she was back in her kitchen. Her son, still talking to her, had never noticed that she had left, if she was gone physically, if she was gone just spiritually, whatever it was some sort of astral journey. We don't know what it was, but that's what she reported that she had happened to her, was just like a triggered moment to where, and this is what's strange, what grabbed her? What triggered that moment for her to all of a sudden have all this detail for a few seconds on this planet, and then she's back?
Yeah, was it a time slip?
Yeah.
What was it? Did she literally go somewhere?
Did she go somewhere? Her son acted like she wasn't even gone. So I don't know. But man, I do love these crazy little slip-ups in time of things that go down.
I recently did a story about a feral pack of humans.
Yes.
I've got another one here.
Oh, all right.
It says, after reading that, I guess they were inspired to send it in. It says, hey, guys, I've gone back and forth about sending this in, but after everything that's happened, I feel like I need to tell someone who might actually take it seriously.
Oh, lay it on us.
I live near Irwin, Tennessee, with my wife and our dog, or at least we did at the time that this started. We began in June of 2019 and turned into something that honestly still doesn't feel real even now. One night, around 8 p.m., my wife and I were sitting in the living room, just watching TV like any normal evening. Out of nowhere, we both noticed movement at the window. When we looked over, there was a face staring in at us. I don't know how else to describe it other than, well, it was wrong. It looked like a man, but deformed, twisted somehow. It looked like Cam Hale.
No.
My wife immediately screamed. The thing just stood there staring at us with this horrible, almost mocking smile.
Y'all got any coffee?
It didn't move at first. It just watched us. Then suddenly it bolted, running off toward the woods like it had been caught doing something that it shouldn't.
Not fast, if it was me. I'm not running fast.
We called the police right away. They came out. They checked the yard, the tree line. They checked everything. They didn't find a single thing. That same night, around 11 p.m., we were in bed, but neither of us could sleep. We were both on edge, and my wife kept a gun nearby just in case.
Good call.
That's when we heard it, laughing. It wasn't normal laughter. I can't stress that enough. It sounded wild, unhinged, like something completely out of its mind. It was coming from right outside of our window. I grabbed my gun and went out on the porch, yelling for whatever was out there to leave. The laughing stopped for a second, and I fired two rounds into the ground to scare it off. That's when I saw them. Two figures took off from behind our shed and ran straight into the woods. Not one, two. The way they moved, it didn't look right. I didn't stick around. I went straight back inside and locked the door. Neither of us slept the rest of that night. The next morning, my wife let our dog out like she always does. Usually, she'd go out too. The dog would go out, do her thing, and then come right back to the door. This time, she never came back. We searched, called for her. Nothing. She was just gone. A little while later, my wife had another encounter. She had gone to the store and was unloading groceries when something caught her attention in the trees. She looked up and saw one of them, sitting up in a tree, staring down at her. She said it was grinning. It scared her so bad that she dropped everything, jumped back into the truck, and drove straight to my office to get me. At that point, we felt completely trapped. The police weren't finding anything, and honestly, it didn't feel like they believed us anyways. I ended up installing security cameras, but that didn't bring much peace of mind. What we were seeing didn't look like normal people. They were tall, over 6 feet, but thin, almost wiry. Like they were strong, but in a different way. They had long, dark hair on their heads, but patchy hair on parts of their bodies. Their skin looked pale, gray. Their fingernails looked long, too long. One of them, I'll never forget this, looked like it had a single tooth visible when it smiled. Their eyes were large, wide, and black. The faces, they looked deformed, like some unnatural mix of a man and something animal and something else I can't even describe. Eventually, I found our dog. She was about 0.8 miles into the woods. What I found, it wasn't really her anymore. I only recognized her by the fur. There wasn't much left besides that and bone. And it didn't stop. We kept having sightings, mostly in the trees or along the edge of the woods. We stopped calling the police because they kept brushing it off, saying we were probably just seeing campers. I said, campers don't laugh like that. My wife says she can tell when they're nearby because of a smell, something distinct that shows up before anything else. She also believes they focus more on her than me, which honestly makes it worse. Not long after, something looked in through a window again. This time, my wife described it as looking evil, like Smeagol. Thin strands of hair hanging over almost a bald head with that same horrible expression. We still hear that laughing sometimes, always at night, always from the woods. It's not constant, but it's enough. Enough to keep us on edge. Enough that we don't go into the woods anymore. Enough that we stay armed and aware at all times. You try to live with it. You tell yourself it's nothing, but the truth is, you never really relax again. My wife is convinced that these things are feral, wild men. She doesn't think they're Bigfoot, and she definitely doesn't think they're people messing with us. After everything we've seen, I don't think they're normal either. Thanks for listening, guys. P.
Mm.
So feral humans living in the woods of Tennessee.
It is a good... Well, it's funny you brought this up, because the story that I've got kind of goes... Could go along with this.
Oh, perfect.
Could definitely go along with this again. But yeah, so get this. Reese writes in saying this about looking for anyone that may have had some sort of strange encounter that's happened in and along the Frio River here in Texas or even around Garner State Park.
I've been to the Frio River.
So he said this is what happened years ago to him and a friend of his, still bothers him to this day. He said, when we were young, of course, we're drinking. We're just being complete idiots, right? We're just disrespectful, just being young punks, basically. We were camped near the river opposite the soccer pitch, right under the shadow of the old Baldy Cliffs. Now, despite warning some other campers that the spirits there are protective, I started aimlessly chopping at a tree with a hatchet, taking a huge chunk out of it for no other reason than to do it. We had thrown trash all around and basically just treated the place like a dumpster. Well, that night, the retribution began. It started with shadows against the tent wall. There wasn't enough light to cast a shadow, but the air outside seemed to intensify. A weird cold glow that shouldn't have even been there. Through the nylon, we saw them. Little people. They were about 2.5 to 3 feet tall, incredibly stocky, and had a dramatic, hunched-over posture. They were completely covered in thick, matted, ancient-looking hair. They began ritualistically marching in a tight circle around our tent, So we're going back into goblins or wild folk. Now he writes, as they circled us, they didn't just walk. They were rhythmically rising up and down, almost like a predatory bobbing motion, while whispering a low guttural chant that we couldn't understand. The footsteps were heavy and physical. Then they started poking the tent. They pushed into the fabric so hard that it was actually hitting my friend's head. We were terrified. Every time we unzipped the tent to scream at them, the campsite was empty. The second we zipped it back up, the rising and falling shadows and the chanting would reappear. One of them was holding a staff or a stick, and I swear I saw the silhouette of a necklace made of bone or stone around its thick, squat neck. Maybe a Puckwudgie, I don't know. I've heard Comanche legends describe rock people who were the guardians of the limestone canyons of the hill country. And again, has anyone ever experienced rising and falling behavior with circling creatures moving around? I don't know. Or even physical interaction with the tent from these spirits. Says we didn't believe the warnings until the forest literally surrounded us. I was very skeptical of paranormal anything until this happened to me. And I still don't understand how me and my buddy could see the same thing, and how every time we would unzip the tent, there was literally nothing there. So what could that have been?
Man, I don't know.
It has to be some sort of fae. You're messing around with the fae. Now, I know I don't believe in Comanche folklore. I'd have to go back and really dig in. But after looking at all the stuff we've looked at, I don't believe that the Comanche folklore has anything in it about the Puckwudgie or anything. I don't believe that was in their folklore at all. I mean, you're talking about basically a nomadic herd. You know, they were nomadic peoples, traveled and they lived on the plains and, you know, all out from basically all of Texas.
Oh, yeah.
You know, way up into the West. So, I mean, I guess they could, but I don't remember ever hearing them. Now, I remember hearing it, you know, from like Cherokee, remember hearing it from other tribes, but I don't remember hearing it from the Comanche. But doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I just don't know. So what could it have been? And people around there warned them of the spirits. And so it sounds like they did get awoken by the spirits, was like, hey, look, you guys, you can't be doing it. It just sounds like fae.
Yeah, I agree. When I think about the Comanche, I always think about, I catch myself when I'm just driving around or if I'm fishing or something, I'm always like, man, you go camping for a few days, but look at all this stuff I have. Imagine just if you had to live out here.
Oh, yeah.
And they were doing it easily.
Yeah, like it was nothing.
Right? Winters, well, I mean, when they go up north, summers when it's hot, like how did they pull that off? Because, like, there was not a lot, I don't think there's any lakes in Texas at that time. Like, one or two.
They had to know where all the water was. That's what made them so, I mean, just the way they could ride, the way they could travel, the way they could fight, the way they knew where all the water was. They knew where all the
It's impressive.
It's impressive because given the vast area that they had under their control, their reign that they were, that they lived in, and their whole area is so huge that it's extremely impressive. And I know that they wintered a lot. You know, and I've brought this up before. There's wintering grounds here. We've been to it here right along the Brazos River.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's part of it. There's huge pecan bottoms, and they have found pottery. You can go down there and literally, I've done it. My brother-in-law was a contractor at the time. We're building a house down for this guy that a cutting horse guy. This has been back in the 90s, was building a house down there. And we were down there, and he had plowed up part of where he was going to build a loafing shed and build a pen for some of his mares, and just drug it with a hair, basically, just kind of turned up the first 4 inches of the ground. We spent about an hour out there one day walking around and had a 5 gallon bucket half full, or maybe 3/4 of the way full, with just flint shards, not to mention finding broken arrowheads, finding all kinds of stuff up there. So there's no telling the numbers that they had stayed there that whole time.
Yeah, just napping flint.
Yeah, just. But what's funny is, like, you bring it up, all the stuff that we use, and back then that was just life.
Yeah.
You didn't go camping. That's how you lived. It would be like, hey, you ready to go living?
Yeah.
Like, what, we're going to go stay in a house this weekend, right? And then that's it. You move back to the outdoors. That's kind of the way it was for them. They knew no different, right? That was just life. And looking at it, would it have been that awful?
I know. I've watched a YouTube video. It was showing how like how their teepees worked. Like it showed them how they erected them,
how quick they lined them up, and how strong they are in winds.
Yeah,
that's what's crazy.
You have like a gap underneath where it doesn't come all the way to the ground, yep. So that it can breathe. The fire
you don't
can
want
breathe.
It to sweat.
Yeah,
because it'll sweat. That's a problem they have with nylon tents. They're popular with backcountry hunting, and that's a problem you can have with a nylon tent is it'll sweat. So at night, it's dripping, it's got moisture in it and all that. So they make a double wall, a thing you can clip inside of it to help eliminate that stuff. But TPs are awesome. What I like about them is because you can stand up in them. You can legitimately get over, you know, you can sleep up next to the sides, but you can get to the middle. You can stand up, you know, you can do all that stuff in there. That's what I like about them.
And I always think about, like, what if you're in the middle of a prairie up in Oklahoma and a tornado comes through, like, where do you go?
Around and round real fast.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, after it passes, you got to walk around and look for your stuff and your friend's stuff and all that. But yeah, where do you go? Like, imagine being up there, like we've talked about in Oklahoma or in Kansas, and one of those big monsters come whipping down through there. You're like, yeah, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
Well, and more than likely they knew. They knew of the weather. They knew of the seasons. They knew where it was more than likely to happen. They're not going to be there in that month. We don't travel till after this amount of time before we go that way to make sure that the weather's going to. And I'm sure you get caught in it, but you kind of get used to the rhythms of it when that's your only thing. When as close as anybody gets to really learning and understanding seasons and weather today is whatever their app says. Throw that thing away. Actually learn something, right? Like get rid of that stupid piece of electronics and experience it.
Yeah, man. Speaking of an experience, let's experience a break. And when we get back from the break, I got another cool story. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Folks, I got you a question. I need to ask y'all something serious. Do you own physical gold? You know, most people don't. And given the current state of the world, well, that's worth us all talking about it, right? Acre Gold makes it simple. You just pick a plan that fits your budget, make monthly payments, and when you've accumulated enough, they ship you a beautifully designed 24-karat Swiss gold bar. Gold is up 70% year after year. And of course, central banks are still buying at record levels. Smart money has been moving into hard assets for a reason, folks. Now, Kyle and I have started doing all this. We've been messing around with it. It's legitimate. They've had subscribers stacking constantly for 6 years because once you hold it in your hand, folks, you'll understand the difference between owning something real, real gold versus just a number on the screen, something written on paper.
That's right. Right now, they're giving away over 18 grams of gold in their Acre Declassified Sweepstakes. Enter for free and subscribe to gold at getacregold.com. That's GETACREGOLD.com. That's getacregold.com. We're back with Expanded Perspectives.
Pow!
I got another dogman sighting here.
Oh, well, let me hear it.
Says, hey, I've been listening to your show for a while.
Hey, thanks.
And after hearing some of the stories people send in, I figured maybe it was time that I shared mine. I've only told a couple people about this because honestly, it sounds insane when I say it out loud.
That's what we like.
This happened about 8 years ago when I was hunting in northern Wisconsin. I've hunted those woods most of my life. My uncle owns a chunk of land up there, and every November, a few of us head out for deer season.
Why don't you shoot us a text about that, too? Go ahead and send us a message. Right? If you got the on-X coordinates, let us know, and we'll get with you sometime.
It's the kind of place where you can walk for miles. Not joking, I got a message the other day. Some guy wants to take us fishing.
Okay.
And I was like, all right, where?
Yeah, where are we going?
It's the kind of place where you can walk for miles and never see another person. Just thick forest, old logging trails, and swamps that stretch on forever. Now, the day this happened, I'd gone out before sunrise. I had a tree stand about a half a mile from the cabin overlooking a small clearing where deer liked to pass through. The morning was quiet. Actually, too quiet. I remember noticing that because usually you'll hear squirrels or birds or stuff moving around. But that morning, the woods felt dead. Around mid-morning, I decided to climb down and walk a bit. Sometimes moving to a new spot helps if nothing's coming through. I started following a narrow game trail that cut through some thick brush. After maybe 10 minutes of walking, I caught a smell in the air. At first, I thought it was a dead animal somewhere nearby. It was strong. That sour, rotting smell you sometimes get if a deer dies in the woods and sits there a while. The smell got stronger the farther I walked. Then I stepped into a small opening in the trees and saw the deer. It was laying on its side in the leaves about 30 yards ahead of me. At first, I thought maybe another hunter had shot it and just hadn't come back to pick it up yet. But something about the way it was laying didn't look right. Its stomach had been torn open. And the way it was torn, it didn't look like a clean cut from a knife or anything like that. It looked ripped, like something had pulled it apart. That's when I noticed that I wasn't alone. On the other side of the deer, standing with its back partly toward me, was something tall. At first, my brain tried to tell me that it was a bear. But bears don't stand like that, I told myself. This thing was upright, completely upright, tall enough that its head nearly reached a low branch hanging over the clearing. Its shoulders were broad and dark, dark fur covered most of the body. The arms hung down along its sides, longer than a person's arm should be. For a second, I just stood there frozen, trying to understand what the hell I was looking at. Then it moved. Slowly, it turned its head towards me, and that's when I saw its face. It looked like a wolf. Not wolf-like, a full muzzle, pointed ears, and a whole shape of a canine head. But it was on top of a body built like a man. And it was big, easily 7 foot tall. The thing looked directly at me. I could see its eyes clearly, even from that distance, yellowish in the sunlight, and they were locked straight on me. I remember this feeling hitting me all at once, like every instinct in my body started screaming that something was very wrong. The creature didn't look surprised to see me. It didn't run. It just stood there beside the deer, watching. One of its hands rested on the carcass like it had been eating when I walked up. Then it did something that still messes with me. It lifted its head slightly into the air and sniffed the air, like it was trying to catch my scent better. That was the moment I realized I needed to leave. Slowly, without turning my back to it, I started stepping backward into the trees. The whole time, that thing just watched me. It didn't chase, it didn't move towards me, but its eyes followed every step I took. Once I got behind the tree line, I turned and walked as fast as I could without outright running. I didn't stop until I reached the logging trail near the cabin. I didn't go back to that clearing. I didn't even tell the guys I was hunting with that I'd seen that until later that night. Even now, I don't know what it was. I've hunted my whole life. I know what bears look like. I know what wolves look like. I know every animal that's supposed to be in those woods. That thing wasn't any of them. The part that still gets to me is how it looked at me. Not like an animal caught off guard, more like something intelligent. Like it knew exactly what I was, and it was deciding whether I was worth the trouble, Ben.
So, nope.
Again,
I don't like
this
it.
One, only the head was a dog. The body looked like a person.
I don't like it.
So is this like some kind of government chimera?
Was it Anubis?
You know, what is that?
Yeah, I don't care for that at all.
And again,
it's like it knew it was looking at him.
Yeah.
It's just hanging out, whatever makes it uneasy. Maybe it didn't have time to fully change, so it just changed its facial appearance real quick because it knows that's the most unsettling.
Maybe it didn't want to leave its dead deer carcass because its brother or something would come and steal it. You know
what
I'm saying?
Hey, that's another good solid point,
like,
too.
I'm not leaving this box of donuts because as soon as I do,
there's an onion bag out here with Spam and frozen vegetables and candy, and I'm not leaving it out here for my jackass brother to come by and get later.
Right.
That's exactly it. I got one more before we wrap this puppy up. OH says this took place in 2006 in Northwood, New Hampshire. Says I was working at a Boy Scout summer camp in Northwoods there, and it was a Wednesday night when the staff get a break and get to go to Concord about 20 miles away. So I was driving home with three other staff members in my car. I had pulled onto Blake's Hill Road, the road the camp was on. It was kind of a less than taken care of side road, mostly surrounded by forest. Now, at this time, it was about midnight, and I was kind of speeding, and it was kind of patchy fog. Well, as I turned a corner, a deer shot out in front of my car. Now, the deer had these really long, crazy-looking legs, like the legs had extra joints. But it also had a wide alligator-like mouth and oversized deep black eyes. I felt a panic so remarkably deep, I can't explain it. Now, as I rounded the corner, this crazy deer darted out in front of my car, and I thought I hit it, but there was no bump, like nothing was there. So I hit the brakes, and it took me a few yards, of course, to stop. And I sat there and asked the guys in the car if they saw it. Two of them said, yeah, one in the back seat behind me. Well, I guess he was dozing off because he didn't see anything. So I just got out. Well, the uneasy feeling was subsiding, but I didn't find anything. No body, no deer, no nothing. Like it had all just vanished in the fog. Fast forward 2 weeks. On a real hot day in early August, a thunderstorm came rolling in. My three friends, and of course, who I was with that night when we went, well, we went down to the lakeside to see the storm come in from the water. We watched a big supercell storm roll over the lake when it was right above us. All of a sudden, the wind picked up more and more until the tops of the trees started snapping. My friends and I began to run to the service center for shelter. The trees around us continued to fall. All around us, hail was pelting, hitting us, everything around. Trees smashing into cars and cabin. Then blackness. For a few seconds, I was unconscious. When I came to, my back and head were screaming in pain. I'd been hit by one of the falling trees. It took a few minutes for help to arrive, all the staff members of the camp. Then I was carried a half a mile over a destroyed road and mess. I had to get 10 stitches in the back of my head, and I received a compression fracture to my L3 vertebrae. It was declared that a microburst had hit the camp. I was, of course, the worst injury. Nobody else even got hurt. And it makes me wonder, was it drawn to me due to the encounter I had 2 weeks before? What could it have been? So you see something in the fog that is not a deer. It's got an alligator mouth, long legs, extra joints. And in less than 14 days later, Mother Nature tries to wipe you out. It could just be a crazy coincidence.
Yeah,
could
absolutely.
Just be. No big deal. Or could just be you got a little of the stain on you from the dark side, and Mother Nature didn't like that and was like, that one there needs to get put down. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. But when you start talking about fog and not deer and storms, you got me.
Yeah, I know. I love the stories. What is it about fog, right?
Every time.
It's like the veil is thinner in the fog,
right? It is,
man.
It is. It is unsettling every time the fog comes in. When it gets foggy here, like when we get ready to get up to go hunt during deer season, especially early in bow season, when the fluctuations are enough and the fog comes in, I'm always like, do I really want to go traipse around in that just now? Like,
right?
I know every inch of where we hunt. I've walked it. We've been on it for years. I've covered the whole place multiple times. But still, I'm like, but what if?
What if?
What if? Yeah.
Well, if you out there listening have a story you want to share with Cam and I and the listeners, do not hesitate. You can email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the hotline 888-393-2783. Don't forget about if you want to support the show, don't forget about our Patreon. You can just go to patreon.com/expandedperspectivesElite. You can also give the gift of Expanded Perspectives Elite. Just head on over there and you can help us out. Don't forget about the Glimmer Man book. You can get yours today on Amazon. You can get it in paperback. You can get it in the audio book. I'm trying to think. I think you can actually get it on not DVD, but CD if you want it. I don't know who does that.
Yeah, right.
But there's several options. You can get it on Kindle or tablets or whatever. You can just go in there. Write us a nice review. That'll help out the show.
Yeah.
Cam,
yeah.
What do you got planned for the rest of your week?
I don't know yet. I know I've got some stuff going on with my granddaughter. Of course, you know, I get her a couple of times during the week, and I'll have to see what she's got popping around here and see how that goes. But right now, just maintain the course.
Are you getting ready for Scarborough Fair?
Yes, dude. I've been ready for it from when we left last year. So, yeah, I'm pumped. Going to go check out the Falconer, get me some beeswax, maybe find me a few incense sticks. I don't know what else I can find there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well.
It's good times. I really like it there.
All right, everybody. I hope you have a good week. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.